Thank you. Anybody else in here attend a Waldorf school at any point in their lives? No. Well, they have this way of greeting everybody for the day. Good day, Lori. And every once in a while, I find myself getting up to speak and like wanting to return to my Waldorf ways. I was recently described as overly peppy. But despite being overly peppy, I have no other disclosures to make. My colleagues have thanked our very generous funders and also told you about how we carry out our work, so I'll let that be. Our objectives for the next 20 minutes are to identify, and I had to give measurable objectives, 5 misperceptions about baby-friendly hospital initiatives and the 10 steps to successful breastfeeding that are commonly held by hospital administrators and healthcare providers, and to describe, and I'll say actually more like 10 interventions with demonstrated success in supporting the transition to learned understandings that will facilitate practice change. And I would actually like to just take one of my 20 minutes and ask all of you, there are 4 breastfeeding sessions going on right now. Hopefully you knew that and you're here by choice. But I'm wondering, your many new faces, why is it that you're at this session and not the other 3? Because I want to make sure that we get you what you came here for. Did you not know? Lori?
I'm very applied to the research study of acknowledge that we can translate when we go back.
Okay, great. So some ways of applying and translating the knowledge. Anybody else? You're getting it already? You got it from the previous speakers. Okay. Well, feel free to let me know. I'm easily distracted anyway, so feel free to interrupt me and say, you know, here's what we're looking for, and I'm happy to help make sure we get you there. I will take you through background, but mainly just visually, since my colleagues already did that. Again, pass through the methods and talk to you about the results, about naive perceptions about baby-friendly and the 10 steps to successful breastfeeding. As I go through, I'll tell you the misperception, and then I'll tell you the recommendations that we have accordingly. Lori, hopefully that's applied enough. And hopefully that will help to reduce confusion and really talk specifically about how these individual interventions can be implemented. So we run the Breastfeeding Friendly Healthcare Project. You've seen these methods, I'm not going to bore you with them. And I'll just get straight to results. This is pretty fun, letting everybody else do all of the scientific piece, and then I get up to talk about all the fun stuff. Becoming baby-friendly is simply too expensive. I would challenge you, raise your hand in this room if you have never heard a hospital respond to you with that. Everybody, absolutely. Mainly they're the fees to Baby Friendly USA, the training, and the infant formula and feeding supplies. One thing that we found is that there really isn't all that much concern about the expense of Baby Friendly USA, but rather an awareness that that is a common concern that one should state, that we're not doing it because it's so expensive. And when we actually ask them, well, what are the costs involved? They usually didn't know what any of the costs involved would be. So simply helping to ask them what their concerns were and attending to those concerns really seemed to help a lot. And also, we encourage our hospitals that we're happy to meet them where they are with this process, and that they don't need to jump right onto the 4D pathway or sign a letter of intent with Baby Friendly USA, which immediately starts that pathway of fees, but rather that they could do that if and when they were ready, and in the meantime, we were here to support their process regardless of those fees. And that really provided a lot of comfort. In addition, our trainings were provided free of charge for the hospitals, so that is a big perk that hospitals not involved in our research study may not have access to. And we had a lot of different discussions around infant formula purchasing, and some hospitals who found the idea of purchasing that, you know, if hospital staff knew that formula was being purchased, then maybe they would use less and that it would be the cart driving the horse. And others where we said, you know what, it's okay, improve the quality, get that exclusive breastfeeding rate up, and then start purchasing when you're going to need less formula. And I would say that all but one of our hospitals chose to take that approach. So some other recommendations to counter. You know, I think that as consultants, we oftentimes we say trust women, trust women, trust women, right, in this work. But then we walk into healthcare settings where we're supposed to be partnering with these healthcare providers and administrators, and that idea of trust sometimes goes out the window and it becomes immediately adversarial. So for us, it was really important that that we believe that their concerns are valid, even if we disagree with them philosophically. And so we oftentimes validated that finances are really a very important consideration, but that those financial concerns extend to the families as well, and that we have a responsibility to make sure that our families are staying fiscally afloat. And by sending them home formula feeding, we're essentially planning out for them, you're going to be spending about $2,000 a year in infant formula, which is, from some of our hospitals, about what they pay for a year for all of their births. So really trying to extend that concept of patient-centeredness into accounting. Again, emphasizing that a progressive approach is perfectly legitimate and allows for iterative financial decisions. So what is it that you feel you're prepared to invest now, today? And you know, maybe they had $500. We found a way to do that, oftentimes making patient education materials or exhibiting materials for local health fairs. Whatever they felt like they could invest financially, we tried to help them find the smartest way to make those investments and not automatically have to jump up to some of the bigger ticket items. Training can be done in many, many ways. It's a key part of standard care, and that was really an essential part of our message, was, you know, you would never consider not training your staff in managing anesthesia or hand washing or wound care, right? Every single nurse in a hospital knows those basic things. And breastfeeding is something that moms are going to need help with throughout their lifespan, and that this would really be something that should be considered a standard of care and not something used just to achieve, quote, a fancy designation. And I can't tell you, I don't know if that's North Carolina, how many of you have heard that Baby Friendly is a fancy designation? I always imagine the ladies of Baby Friendly like swishing in their ball gown. Support for implementation can come from many places that don't charge fees. And how many of you have state breastfeeding coalitions? And how many of you are from states that have programs that are willing to go in and help hospitals with their processes? Yeah, there are 23 states that have active programs right now for helping hospitals with implementation free of charge. There are lots of ways of getting the support without having to pay fees. And that improving breastfeeding support is critical, and sometimes the bottom line is that it may require financial realignment and prioritizing. Okay, another huge naive perception was that mothers would be angry and patient satisfaction scores would plummet. They were concerned that Baby Friendly, as Nathan had mentioned, would be disallowing formula and worse, guilting mothers into breastfeeding. They were concerned that rooming in would lead to overtired, angry mothers in dire need of peace and quiet. How many of you go to the hospital for peace and quiet? I wish. Mothers want their gift bags, and babies will scream incessantly without pacifiers. And I think, Anne, it was actually you who shared this secret with me. The way that you can tell a baby-friendly hospital when you walk on the floor is if you listen and it's quiet. Because the babies are with their mothers, they're happy, they're calm. You don't have nurses running around everywhere panicked and stressed because the moms and babies are happier and healthier. Was that you who told me that? Exactly. It's hard to keep your tongue out of your cheek when you're having those moments, isn't it? So we countered with them. About the idea that Baby Friendly is for all dyads, and that actually things like rooming in and self-soothing and skin-to-skin care were really healthy practices for all babies, and that all mothers feeding in all ways will be supported and respected. And mothers and babies are happiest and safest when they're together. Another piece, these are sort of ideas that we had to help work on them with, their beliefs and attitudes. And one area where we were really able to, we got the most interference and we were able to meet them with the best evidence, was that rooming in of mom and baby actually helps to improve the quality and increase the quantity of sleep for both mom and baby. And when administrators and clinical lead staff saw those numbers, That really helped to back it up, that we weren't just those crazy people from Chapel Hill coming in to tell them that, you know, just shove those moms and babies together and everything will be great. The next thing we heard is that the hospital would be accountable for injury occurring without provider supervision. The mothers were going to forget to feed their babies. They would bed share, heaven forbid. They would smother the babies in their sleep. The nurses can't document events for which they're not present, and everything must be documented. And that the mothers will feel vulnerable. So what we found is that, you know, you sometimes have to just, again, meet them where they're at and say, well, yeah, the hospital is accountable for patient safety. And they're accountable regardless of where the baby is and where the mom is. Infants are almost always safest with their mothers. There are very few exceptions to that rule. And so if we're talking about accountability, let's put them where they're safest. Mothers worry about their baby's treatment as one of many infants in the nursery, and in fact, that fear and that sense of vulnerability, the panic that comes from being separated from your infant, can make one draw make some accusations that, you know, is exactly what these healthcare administrators are so concerned about. We had one infant who had an allergic reaction to a formula feeding. And fortunately, it was nothing too traumatic, but we've gotten a lot of mileage out of that story because that mom was furious and, you know, was calling lawyers from the maternity center, and because she was trying to breastfeed her baby wouldn't feed and suddenly threw up all this formula. So just that one story alone was like, yeah, you want to talk accountability, here you go. The idea that safe sleep is a complex concept that isn't just back to sleep and sleeping separately, but that there are a lot of indicators and practices that we know really help to make sure that babies are safe while they're sleeping. And we need to consider all of those factors, not just the bed sharing piece. And of course, you know, and this one takes a little bit more time to really do some convincing on, but that not supporting breastfeeding introduces the risks to mothers and babies of not breastfeeding. And if we're looking beyond just that one occurrence of care in the maternity center and make it patient-centered, that's a risk that lasts a lifetime, not just the 24 hours, 48 hours for which the hospital is immediately responsible for. And departments of ethics have really been hugely instrumental in getting that idea across. The 10 steps are a tool for those seeking designation, not a guide to quality improvement. And I have to say, this one was really hard for me personally to be compassionate with. I felt like this was a lot of a lack of concern for the current scenario and sort of apathy about improvement processes. The guide is there, but when I got a little bit further in, I realized they actually don't know what underlies those 10 steps. So all of the little pieces that we do, for example, in order to avoid routine supplementation, things like where you store your formula, having consent for infant formula, educating patients about supplementation, they didn't know those pieces. So I sort of flexed a little bit and could understand how they didn't see it as a quality improvement tool and helped hospitals to work on making it more of a work plan. So we worked on that a lot. And we also helped to show them that they could use their own QI methods that are so frequently employed in hospitals. Hospitals always have some sort of quality improvement method in place. They can use the methods that they're most comfortable with. They don't have to use some unique breastfeeding QI model. Another result, a naive perception, was that baby-friendly hospitals cannot stock formula, that all mothers are expected to breastfeed, which I would say is the case, but not in the way they're thinking of expectations. Mothers who want or need to supplement must bring their own formula, and most mothers will need to supplement at some point in their hospitalization. And then oftentimes when you say, well, why are they going to need to? And they say, well, because there's a standing order from the pediatrician. And again, you have to just bite your tongue. Recommendations to counter this is the idea that actually no baby-friendly hospitals, they don't routinely supplement newborns, but you do have infant formula, and actually you have to purchase it. But it's amusing because it's oftentimes the hospitals who are saying, well, I don't want to do this project because we can't purchase the formula, and, well, we don't want to do the project because we can't stock formula, or we wouldn't be allowed to stock formula. It's like, you see how these are in conflict with one another? So it's just a matter of explaining how every supplementation counts and how that routine supplementation is actually what is needed to be avoided. And we show them responsible ways of stocking formula. It needs to be out of sight of the patients, preferably as out of sight from everybody as possible. It can be housed in a Pyxis, as you see in this image here, where it is signed out or electronically checked out. And this is so silly, but it seems to make a big difference. Break up the six packs. Even when they go in the Pyxis, oftentimes hospitals will put the full six pack in there. And rather than going in and getting one bottle, they'll go in and grab the whole six pack and still bring that six pack to the mother's room. So it defeats the purpose of the Pyxis. And oftentimes the actual product management departments won't do this, so it winds up being somebody on staff who's responsible for that. But it should just be a barrier that they're thinking about in advance of using something like a Pyxis. Any questions so far? Okay, yeah.
I think I know what a Pyxis is, but can you explain
that? Sure. A Pyxis is a product management system where all of the items that you're wanting to stock are stored inside, it's locked, and when you're ready to get out any particular item, you have to scan off for the patient number and the nursing number, or the provider number, whoever is taking it out, so that there's an automatic record of the provider that took it, for which patient, and then they can actually go back and do a chart audit according to whatever their policy may be. So for example, at one of our project hospitals, all mothers who are supplemented are required to sign an acknowledgement for formula supplementation. So all mothers, all patient numbers who are checked into that Pyxis for the formula are then double-checked to make sure that they all have a consent on file. And if there's a discrepancy, then it's an opportunity to educate or give a consequence with the provider engaged. Does that make sense? And there are a lot of different brands. Pyxis is one brand, actually. In order to keep getting free formula, we must distribute the gift packs. And of course, this is for the hospitals who said we need to keep getting our free formula. And we can't or won't pay for the formula. They oftentimes will say, well, it's part of our contract. And in the beginning, I said, no, of course not, they can't do that. And Miriam educated me, yes, they can. So we started saying, well, you know, feel free to bring your contract to the next meeting and let's look at it together. Or I recommend to you that you go and you meet with your purchasing agent and that you actually look at what's in there. All you have to do to change your formula contract is call your formula rep and say we'd like to draw up a new contract. I've never in our project encountered a formula company who has said we can't do it right now when all you're looking to do is change the gift packs. If you're switching to purchasing, it can be a different scenario. And sometimes you will have to wait actually for your contract to expire and then renegotiate, but they're generally pretty short term. Anne?
I was just going to say, the word contract is a little scary.
Yes. Exactly. It's a purchasing agreement.
So it's not like there's a legal thing here that you're going to have to change. You're just changing what it is, but it's not really a contract.
Exactly. And that's a very, very good point. Thank you, Anne, because oftentimes the hospital staff, even the purchasing staff, will go to the formula representative and say, we want to make changes, and it's like treated as if it's a contract when really it is an agreement for purchasing. But I will say that we actually have a few hospitals that do have contracts for purchasing their formula. I don't know that our hospitals who are getting the free formula have a contract.
Emma?
Yeah.
The impression is that a number of hospitals have stopped giving out formula and gift packs and found simply that there was no issue of contracts. The formula companies still gave what they gave. Is that uniform? Are there exceptions? Are there places where
That's uniform. I've never heard of a company saying no. Because oftentimes then if they really give pushback, say you're working with Infamil, and you say, we're not going to give your gift bags anymore, but we do want your formula. And they say, no, well then we're not going to give you the free formula. Okay, well then we'll go talk to Similac. And, you know, immediately they'll actually come and remove your gift bags for you. So, no, it's not an issue. Miriam, did you want to add something? Oh, did I understand it correctly? Okay, great. I've got 1 minute. All right, and I'm actually good. You're going to be impressed that this is the last one. another naive perception is that implementing the 10 steps is a lactation department or a special interest group project. And in every guidance from every organization or every expert who has ever done this, they tell you need a multidisciplinary task force, and that is I can't emphasize enough how important that is. But this naive perception usually results from a very real situation where, for a long time, only a small group of movers and shakers are getting together to try to make these changes. My alarm telling you to stop. Okay. Lord help me. All right, almost done. And they also believe that breastfeeding is a personal choice or special interest and therefore should be supported by a special interest group. Not that breastfeeding support is a critical health intervention that also happens to make mothers and babies happy. So again, we advocate for that standard of care, and there's no other standard of care that is protected and promoted by one small special interest group or one small group of professionals. And that lactation services or small interest group likely lack the leverage that they need to achieve staff-wide buy-in. And high-level support is really essential for a significant QI, so sometimes we'll work with that special interest group and get some small successes that they can feed back and show, you know, look how much we've improved the patient satisfaction scores by doing X. And then we are able to leverage that high-end support. But it's really important at some point to get that involved before you make the bigger critical decisions, for example, like transitioning to mother-baby care. Generally, I would just close by saying that you've got to consider the attitudes and beliefs that are at the heart of each naive perception. We can't simply respond with yes, but every time, and I really always want to do that. But rather, attend to those using the theory of reasoned action, where we first look at what their attitude is and work with them on validating, understanding, sharing our attitudes, and that attitude change will lead to a shift in intention, where we can then easily support the change in practice. So again, have compassion. Today's healthcare climate is stressful. Hear from people with various perceptions, especially the people who are champions or roadblockers. And I always say, who would you go to if you wanted the latest gossip? Because they're the people who can tell you what's really going on. Trust in their experience, become their partners, and know that real and perceived barriers almost always have a tenable solution. And I would just, again, emphasize, I'm not going to read all these to you, but build on the successes and try to understand the failures. And together, if you really are thinking about it as a collaboration between your staff, your team, and your hospitals, you will achieve more successes than failures. Thank you. And those are our project leaders.
So questions for Nathan, Miriam, Emily, if you want to come up?
I did leave out one thing that Miriam had actually asked me to mention, since there's no question. Our state is divided into 6 perinatal care regions, and the project has been designed such that there's one best practice site or hospital who's been working with us in each of those regions. And those hospitals will then serve as mentors to other hospitals in their area. So now we've really built up this strong consumer demand among mothers, and they're coming and asking for this care, and the local hospitals who aren't part of our project can now go to the BFHC hospital in their region and say, well, how did you do this? And they're actually doing it, which is pretty amazing.
Great. Miriam can also answer questions for Barbara's talk. Laurie, then Ken.
All very nice. Very
Lori is asking how we can understand the concept of getting high-level support on board. And oftentimes for us, it really was a matter of demonstrating successes and those small successes from the start and showing that this is something they can be proud of. And if they show that, you know, they're supporting this and there's all of these successes in this area, then they're seen as the leader who really jumped on the cool train early. So that was an important piece. For example, we had a lot of moms talking about their improved patient satisfaction with skin-to-skin. And you know, suddenly, as soon as we started seeing all of that patient satisfaction qualitative response, the labor and delivery manager in one hospital was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm the queen of skin-to-skin. And suddenly she, you know, wanted me to send her all of the best evidence so that she could speak up on it. And then also employee satisfaction. Administrators are often just as concerned with their employee satisfaction as they are with the patients. They want the nurses to be happy. So trying to find ways of implementing these changes that don't make the nurses feel more overworked and more demoralized and more stupid is going to help them be happier with their jobs. And then, you know, their administrators are going to want to support that.
Also, I really do think the sensitization of the high-level folks is important. They need to know that it's not going to cost them. They need to know about the Joint Commission. These are things that motivate, you know, it's a whole different set of things that motivate those CEOs than motivate the nurses. And so we developed a sensitization training, which where we were invited to do it had a very real impact. But again, if the CEO won't even invite you in, it is indeed. First, it has to come up from below, and then they invite you in. We had good success in one hospital with a sensitization-type approach. We had a great success with a pediatric practice that ruled the hospital in another setting. And in other places, unfortunately, also in the United States, the administration of hospital changes every other day. So you can get the administrators all on board, and then they're gone. So it is a constant thing. Thank you for the question.
Another good thing with that is sometimes if you can identify who's next in line. So we had a hospital where we knew one nurse manager was on the way out, and we tried to figure out, well, who's going to be the one to step up in her place? And we actually supported her to attend an IBCLC training program before she was promoted. And that's the hospital that I mentioned in yesterday's presentation that had an increased breastfeeding rate of 210% this past year. So that largely was, and she was not a champion in the beginning. So it was a matter of saying, you're the one who's going to be doing this, and let's make you our best friend.
So that's the Henry Kissinger way of doing it. My question, in view of the American Academy of Pediatrics' recent statements on bed sharing and pacifiers, have you gotten any pushback?
Working on this in many angles, so I'll just say something briefly, and Emily will, I'm sure, will want to add more. This is what Emily may say. We are striving at the state level to bring the messages in line with each other, and Emily has been sitting on that board. Yes, there has been pushback. I mean, the simple answer is yes. And today in the United States, the crib community has a bigger lobby than the breastfeeding community. So this is going to be an ongoing discussion about what is safe sleep in the hospital versus what is safe sleep at home. Did you want to comment on that?
Sure. And I know they like to have the questions for recording, otherwise I would just speak loudly. So the AAP policy on pacifiers has really been useful for us because it's been a teachable moment to better explain that the research on pacifiers and sudden infant death syndrome is actually not yet really fully validated and is still very ambiguous, whereas the relationship between pacifier use and not satisfying one's breastfeeding intention is very clear. And for that reason, the AAP has said to delay pacifier introduction for at least 4 weeks or until a strong pattern of breastfeeding has been established. Once we explain exactly what that is step by step, the hospitals are usually quite comfortable. And again, we really have to work with them on what safe sleep means to them and that there are a lot of different factors. I skipped past this because my alarm was going off at me. But we really, in our sensitizations, Miriam said, we try to give them all of the motivators that, you know, the usual suspects, the Joint Commission, any of the supportive professional organization statements and policies, but oftentimes it's asking a lot of questions. What information do you have? What information do you need? What barriers do you have? How have you achieved success in the past? All of those questions. And then we can work with the existing materials and policies in order to help meet their needs. And that definitely applies to safe sleep. We've had a lot of, we had one hospital actually who didn't have rolling bassinets, and that was a concern for them, that they felt like they couldn't support safe sleep because babies were basically, out of convenience, going to be stuck in beds with the moms, and the moms didn't really want that, and so they would be then carrying the babies back to the nursery. And so we had to work with them on those infrastructural issues that probably we wouldn't have even noticed otherwise because we all just expect the bassinets to be on wheels, right? So really asking questions and then trying to meet them where they were is really key in those kind of big policy decisions.
Well, like everything, a little bit of pickup. We applied for the funding to support low-wealth hospitals. And so Emily did a process of contact. We have very good contacts across the state, and there's data available. We were able to identify those hospitals and then approach those hospitals. Some were responsive, some were not. The 10, that or 9 or 12. Or the
13 total, 6 in the research.
The 6 who were involved in the research were those that, frankly, expressed, were there at the beginning, expressed the most interest.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the total, not that.
It was very easy to get hospitals engaged in the process. Again, because from the very beginning we emphasized, you are the experts, you are the stakeholders, we're here to help you in whatever way we can. We have some ideas about what works, we have a lot of expertise, but ultimately we're here to work with you. And that was so refreshing to them that they were right on board. And, well, at that point, Joint Commission was NARA.
No,
this was 2007. This was 2007. So this was non-existent. We looked at the perinatal care region in the counties and their wealth tiers. So we were able to see which were the poorest regions of the state. And I systematically went to the poorest county in each region first, to their county hospital, their public hospital, and prioritized accordingly. So if that poorest hospital said no, then I went to the second poorest hospital with the fundamental eligibility criteria in place that they serve greater than 60% of the Medicaid-eligible population, that they have an LC on staff, just to try to establish that baseline. Can you clarify what you're thinking?
The 10 steps does have a requirement in it about having women pump breasts during their stay in the hospital.
No. There's a component in there in part of step 5 is what you're thinking about in terms of helping women to manage lactation. And that includes helping women to know how to hand express their milk. And that actually is very important that it's hand expression, because we know that that practice is associated with maternal self-efficacy, that she's able to actually show herself that she has colostrum in milk.
So there was no use of breast pumps throughout this intervention?
We actually discouraged the introduction of breast pumps for normal, healthy mothers and babies in the maternity stay. In the NICU, of course, we want those moms to be expressing milk in whatever way they need to be doing so, but of course, always with the emphasis first on hands-on expression, hands-on pumping, and mixed hands or pump, as indicated by the situation, the healthcare provider, or the mom. And we do use Jane Morton's videos, and actually, those are available for purchase very inexpensively to put on your patient education programming on TV. And moms have found those very helpful, and the nurses are happy that they can just stick the TV on and then come in to ask if moms have any questions.
Can I just, since we have somebody from Nicaragua in the audience, I just wanted to say that in Nicaragua, I was down there about a year and a half ago, and the women who have to express the milk because for whatever reason are given the option of hand expression or pump expression. So they all try both. And where women actually have the opportunity to select, many were choosing hand expression over the pumps. Many found it faster, easier than the use of the pumps. We just have this comerciogenic culture. So thank you for being here, for reminding me what I saw in Nicaragua.
The nurses also, those of you who didn't come to our talk yesterday, the nurses have a huge amount of increased self-efficacy by teaching hand expression. And I can't emphasize enough how after leaving every single training, we would get a phone call from every hospital saying, we had this nurse and she went in and she tried to teach a mom hand expression just on a fluke and it worked and she came out shrieking every single hospital after every single training. Those nurses were so satisfied that they could show those mothers that they had milk. That, I mean, once they learned hand expression, it was like our jobs were so much easier. If we knew that in 2007, whew.
Were you the one teaching hand expression?
No, actually, we taught a few core champions in each unit to teach it themselves, and then of course also use Jane's video.
Okay.
Are there any questions about childcare?
What are your next steps? Are you taking this on the road or going
to childcare?
This is the politics of Miriam says. So where to from here? Well, obviously, we think we have an approach that is worth taking on the road. And so we have sought resources to take it on the road. The bottom line is that the Carolina Global Breastfeeding Institute exists. So as long as we exist and we have a small endowment, we will continue to support our work and continue it. One of the mechanisms that we do research, service, and training. So we actually have two sorts of approaches that we hope will be sustainable. One is that we have a training program for all the trainings that we developed for this project. We now have them available. Brooke Colgan, who's our head of training, has developed them into very nice packages, and so we hope that people will want to use that. And we have been talking with some entities who are supporting baby-friendly hospital initiative to offer this, and that's in a nascent stage. Actually, three things. The second thing is that we're going to have a toolkit available once the project is over to help hospitals do this implementation aspect. And the third thing is that we just sponsored an interstate collaborative of those 22 states and possibly more in the future who are trying to do some kind of implementation at the state level. And that, too, is going to be an ongoing process. So if you know any funder who is interested in any of those three, we are most interested. But there's no question that it's going to be ongoing and available. Thank you for that question.
Thank you.